Welcome to Work Matters. I'm Nan Russell. You know, here on Work Matters, we believe that your work is about becoming who you are capable of becoming. And our goal and our job then is just to help you get wherever you want to go to achieve what you want to achieve in your life. So that means sometimes on the show we're a little bit coach, sometimes we might be a little bit motivation or inspiration, sometimes we're even a bit of a nudge. But one thing you can always count on here on the show is that it's always real world. We want to bring you real world guests, real world tips, real world insights that you can use right now today to be winning at working, achieving your goals, creating the career or business that you want for your life, and doing the work that calls to you. So we bring you all sorts of real world topics, and today's real world topic, it's about you. You know, that relationship that you have with yourself can impact whether or not you are living your life deliberately or you are just kind of going through it. My guest today is a world-renowned coach, a psychotherapist. She's also the author of an international bestseller. Lauren Mackler will be joining me about midway through the show. We're going to be talking about her latest book, Soulmate, which is spelled S-O-L-E-M-A-T-E, Master the Art of Aloneness and Transform Your Life. So it's all about having a good relationship with ourselves. Before Lauren joins me, my colleague and friend Beth Pelkowski will be joining me on our first segment today, which is called Uncommon Sense. It's a place where we talk about some of your questions that we got in the previous week. So we'll be doing that. And then I want to share with you some things in my e-box that you may have missed this week. One of them is a brand new website that lets you track what's going on with the jobs in the U.S. and whether they're staying in the U.S. or they're going overseas. So I want to share some of that with you, as well as a new study out by Gallup about how do we feel about our workplaces these days. And then I want to end the show with something to think about. So that's what's coming up on today's show. And as always, you can find out a lot more information about our guests, about the things that we talk about here on the show, by going to our website, workmatterswithnan.com. That's workmatterswithnan.com. There you'll be able to not only enter some contests to win some things, you'll also find a few free gifts for listeners of Work Matters, including a download of my first book, Nibble Your Way to Success, which is available to you free by just going to that website, workmatterswithnan.com. Check it out. You'll find all sorts of information that can help you be creating the work and the life that you want. We've got a lot coming up on the show, so let's get started. Uncommon Sense is a time when we talk about uncommon practices at work that really change the way you can be winning at working, but they're really common sense. And when I say we, I am talking about my friend and colleague, Beth Pelkowski, who joins me when we do this segment. And I'd like to welcome Beth back to the show. Hi, Beth. How are you?
I'm good, Nan. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, thanks. And I understand we have some listener questions today.
Yes, we do. Our first listener question: I have 10-plus years of management experience and 2 years of college, but no degree. I'm currently unemployed. Is my lack of a degree holding me back from being hired and perhaps getting ahead? Should I go back to school now?
Well, you know, there's some interesting points there, but the first thing that comes to mind that I would like to address is not knowing the industry or the field this person's in, I'm still going to say the same thing, which is it's very doubtful that the lack of a college degree with 10 years of management experience would be holding them back from getting another management job. However, the belief they have about the fact that it could be holding them back could be significant in terms of the way that they're thinking about it. And, you know, my feeling about this whole issue of should they go back to school, I would really encourage this person to think about instead, depending again on their profession, maybe looking at a professional designation or certificate or status in certain kinds of professions, have certifications that indicate how proficient you are or how knowledgeable you are or how current you are in a particular industry, and getting that sort of updated skill set in that industry or in that profession might be to their benefit.
Yeah, and I would just kind of piggyback on that. When I read the question, it seems to me that, you know, one of the things that the person needs to think about, or a listener needs to think about, is their own thoughts and their beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, because it could be that person's attitude, really, about it.
Right, that they never finished. Yeah, yeah.
And that they really need to examine whether they believe that it is, and, okay, so do you believe it so strongly that you need to do something about it? Like maybe getting a certification or looking at companies that may contribute something. If you were to go back to school to get your degree, that may be one avenue to pursue. Or think about how they present themselves in an interview. I mean, how do they describe their experience? Don't dwell on something that you don't have.
Which is a very good point. And also to that point, it's certainly easy these days with everything that's available online to continue education, and for their ability to even be in the process of that, if there is a belief structure, that may in and of itself give them that extra boost when they go for an interview if they felt that they were moving directionally that way.
Going along with how they present themselves at the interview, I think also, like, what does your cover letter and your initial kind of resume look like? Are you emphasizing your experience and what skills that you have that the employer is looking for? Because a lot of times, on the flip side, you know, if you're a recent college grad, the thing that doesn't necessarily enhance you is the fact that you may not have any experience.
Right.
When you're looking for a job. So, yeah, you have the degree and you have all the book knowledge and maybe the theory, but you don't have, maybe have an internship or something, but you don't have the experience
mm-hmm.
that a lot of employers are looking for. So I think for this listener, I think the person should really be thinking about, well, what do they do have going for them?
Yes, I do agree with that. And one last thing that I would just say about that, however, is that employers are looking for lifetime learners. And because the world changes constantly, you can't have all the knowledge in your head, but you have to know how to keep up with it and how to be with the times. And therefore, however their experience level is, updating their knowledge level, even in technology or some of the ways in which people are now communicating that might be different or be enhancing, would show that they have that sort of spirit of lifelong learning, and that would be a big plus to them, degree or no degree. It's really about the process of obtaining information that's useful and what you can give back to that employer.
You know, that's a great point. Hopefully we gave our listeners some thoughts, you know, that they can think about.
Yes, hopefully.
Our next listener question, I know it is important for a prospective employer to get to know you during an interview, but are there topics you should definitely not mention?
Well, this is an interestingly worded question, so I want to address that first. This concept of get to know you in an interview, that phrase, I would like to just reframe that and say a prospective employer is not really trying to get to know you. They're trying to find out what you can do for them and what kinds of skills you have, and are you a good fit into their culture. And with everything that's out there that right now has this concept of transparency and social networking and let's just tell everybody everything, I wouldn't carry that into an interview because they don't really want to get to know you that way. And there are definitely barriers that you need to keep in your mind about how to stay professional in that interview and how to relate any examples or experience that you have to that work environment. So, for example, you know, you might be an avid, you know, fitness person. You might be an avid runner or something like that. And you might decide you wanted to talk about that, but you need to relate that to the work environment about, you know, that's an example of your discipline or how you're able to really keep focused on something that's important to you, not just the fact that, hey, this is a good hobby of mine.
That's a very That's a very excellent point. I think you definitely want to relate things about to know you in quotes, like what your goals are,
right,
you know, highlight your accomplishments and, you know, things that motivate you and different things like that that may connect with some hobbies or, you know, some things that you do during your downtime or whatever. But an interview is not a chit-chat kind of thing.
Right. This is not over the, you know, at the bar.
Right, right. Having said that, I will swing a little bit the other way and say, but don't neglect trying to make some kind of maybe personal connection with the person, because that also can help you, you know, kind of create a memorable impression that maybe somebody else doesn't do during an interview. And that could be the difference.
Yes, and I do agree with that. And I also agree with the fact that, you know, we tend to feel very comfortable around people who have similar interests and values that we do. And oftentimes that can come to play in an interview when one is thinking about how best that working team is going to be. So it is important, I think, to do what you said. But there is that sort of fine line. And when in doubt, I would be just very cautious. And I certainly would caution people about, you know, not too soon in an interview bringing things in about family or children or other kinds of obligations that might be perceived in a way that might not be to your benefit. Now, there are obviously legal issues associated with that from the employer's side, but I can't tell you the number of times that people volunteered things to me when I was interviewing them that I didn't even ask about, and they shouldn't have volunteered. And it's kind of like, you know, the jury instructions where they say, ignore what was said. Well, you're really trying to ignore what was said, but, you know, they just told me that they have an issue with childcare. I don't want to know that.
The first thing, actually, that came up for me, like, as a specific thing was, you know, don't tell war stories.
Yes.
About, like, previous bosses or coworkers or anything that kind of gonna, you know, taint your image or anything like that in an effort to answer a question about, so what was your previous workplace like? What challenges did you have? I mean, like, you know, some of those questions are really can be open-ended, and you really need to think about how you're going to answer them.
That's a very good point, because I was really keeping this in the context of sort of more personal get-to-knowing. But you're right, when you start to talk about your work habits and your work philosophy and your work past relationships and getting to know you there, that's where you definitely want to be extra careful as well. And certainly we're not saying lie or any of those things, but,
No. You
know, you don't want to be a victim about what happened to you. You want to have some reflective perspective, and, you know, maybe that helps as well. So good luck to this person.
Yes.
Yes. You know, we love to talk about the questions that you bring to us, so we would encourage you to do that and to tell us what's on your mind. You can do that one of two ways. You can get us a message through our website, workmatterswithnan.com. In fact, there's a form you can just fill out and hit a little button and it comes right to us. That's workmatterswithnan.com, or our toll-free number. There's a recording. You can leave a message at 866-944-8195. Again, 866-944-8195. So Beth, it's always great to talk to you about some of the questions that we get, and I hope you have a really terrific week, and we'll talk again soon.
My pleasure, Nan. Have a great week.
Stay tuned. We're going to be right back. You are listening to Web Talk Radio Network. You can find it at www.webtalkradio.net. Web Talk Radio Network is distributed by Matrix Media, a Chicago-based talk radio firm. Go to www.webtalkradio.net to learn more about Web Talk Radio. Web Welcome back to Work Matters. I'm Nan Russell. We are now going to talk about some of the things that hit my e-box this week. These are things that many of you send me, or I may find when I'm out and about, both in person and out on the internet. And they're things that I think all of us need to know about, or they may have some interesting thoughts or tips or trends that may be helpful to you and your work. So the first one that I found interesting had to do with a little article in the New York Times about a brand new website. This website is able to basically do a job tracker, which is the name of the website. And we all know that we hear about this all the time. People get very angry about what's happening with the perception, at least, of all the jobs that are going overseas and the reality of that in many areas of the country or many sectors of business. And this is a way to track that. It is on a website which is workingamerica.org/job tracker. That's workingamerica.org. Job tracker, and I went to it today and I checked it out and I put in, you put in a zip code and it brings up and tells you what businesses in that area are doing what with jobs. And it's not just about the jobs that are going overseas. It's a lot of really good information if you are looking for a job in the area or you want to see what's happening in your region. It'll talk about the jobs that maybe have been exported, the companies that are doing that in your zip code area. Those that have announced layoffs, that have issued the WARN Act. It also has some safety and health warnings where it'll tell you what companies in the area are in violation of safety and health regulations. So, and it goes on, it has five different factors that it tracks for you. So workingamerica.org/job tracker, you put in your zip code and you can find out what's going on in your area with some of the jobs around you. The second thing that crossed my desk, which I thought was interesting this week, is this whole question, does employee engagement really drive financial success? We hear about it all the time. We talk about it all the time on the show about employee engagement and what some of the issues are. But there's a lot of that sort of chicken and the egg question, like which is really first, you know, does it create and spark that financial success, or are employees more engaged when they're working for companies that have good financial results? Well, there was a study came out from Gallup. It is a study done by Dr. Jim Harter and Dr. Frank Schmidt. They evaluated about 2,200 business units. And basically what they found, here's the bottom line, and I'll quote from this study. They found that engaged employees cause high retention rates, better financial performance, and customer loyalty. All interesting and good news, not any real surprises there. But there's a lot of great information in their study, but also there are factors that they identified, elements of good managing, the elements of worker engagement. There are 12 of them. I just want to give you the top five. The first, I know what is expected of me at work. Number two, I have the materials and equipment I need to do my work right. Number three, at work I have the opportunity to do what I do best every day. Number four, in the last week, I received recognition or praise for doing a good job. And number five, my supervisor or someone at work cares about me as a person. So some interesting perspectives, no matter your role in business, about this whole issue of financial results and employee engagement. And finally, the last thing that I wanted to mention to you is a survey about how do U.S. workers feel about the workload right now? And is this the new norm or what's going on? We know that oftentimes we do feel overworked at work, whether or not there's been changes in staffing levels or not. And that's part of what this tells us. It tells us, and this is from Gallup also, it tells us that 38% of people who are employed feel that they're understaffed. But 52% say, you know, there's really the right number of employees in our company. So I thought that was very good news, and it is actually one of the indicators that has moved into the positive category in the last few months. So that was also good news that either the workload has changed or maybe some new people have been added to help it or some things have shifted that have made it a little bit better for folks. So that was good news, I think, about all that. As always, we will have the links to this information on our website, workmatterswithnan.com. That's workmatterswithnan.com, so that you can check it out and discern what you want to discern from it if something hits you as important to your work. Stay tuned. We're going to be right back. We're going to take a quick break here. And when we get back, my guest today, Lauren Mackler, is joining me, and we're talking all about the relationship with self and how that impacts your work and your life. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. It's rough out there, whether you're looking for a job or have one. I'm Nan Russell, author of Hitting Your Stride, Your Work, Your Way. And I know what it's like to lose your job or feel frustrated at work. Work should feel easy and natural, like you're hitting your stride. Find out how to make your work or your job search feel like that. Check out my latest book, Hitting Your Stride, Your Work, Your Way.
Hitting Your Stride, Your Work, Your Way is available now at Amazon.com and all major bookstores.
Next guest says the key to living in alignment with your life's purpose is mastering the art of aloneness. She says most of us stumble through life instead of creating the lives we want deliberately, but she's here to help us do just that. Lauren Mackler is a world-renowned coach, psychotherapist, and the author of the international bestseller Soulmate, and that's spelled S-O-L-E, mate, Master the Art of Aloneness and Transform Your Life. Lauren, welcome to Work Matters. It's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Great to be with you.
When you talk about soulmate and aloneness, are we talking about having a good relationship with ourselves?
That's exactly right. Not about being alone per se, although for people that are living their lives alone, it's very helpful. But it's not just for people that are single. It's also for people that are in a relationship that want to develop a better relationship with themselves. We're so conditioned to focus on relationships with other people, yet the primary relationship truly is with us, because we're the only person that's with us 24/7 from the time we're born until we leave this earth. We very often neglect that relationship. That's where it starts. And it's also a mirror very often of our relationships with others. So it's a really important thing.
And do we know if there's something askew? Do we know some way if we're the people who are stumbling through life instead of living deliberately? Are there clues to that?
Back up and just kind of let you know the foundation of the book is born with innate personality traits, talents, passions even. And we're also born with a very intact self-esteem. And then we come into the family and the life conditioning process begins. It's things like our gender, the family dynamics, the life circumstances that we're born into, cultural influences, religious, all our experiences, all these things shape who we become. And because most people come from families that have at least some level of dysfunction, there's an erosion that takes place of our innate wholeness. We lose parts of our potential, if you will. It kind of puts a lid on our potential. And then we grow up, and by the time most of us become adults, we no longer have access to all the potential, and we're all born with tremendous potential. We then feel the sense of incompleteness, or it comes up as all different kinds of symptoms. It might be insecurity, it might be low self-esteem, it might be fear, whatever it is. And we try to compensate and unconsciously reclaim that wholeness outside of ourselves through another person, through getting a good job or making money or having a nice house or whatever it is. And so the work that I do is about helping people understand what parts of their innate wholeness and potential became diminished or compromised in some way through their life conditioning. And then what do they need to do to bring those parts back into the fold so they have access to them, you know, and what they need internally to create and live the life, that they have the potential to live and that they aspire to.
Let me be a cynical listener for a minute. And based on what you were saying, does that mean that it gives us permission to sort of blame our family and the way we were raised and not have accountability for our life? How does that work?
Absolutely not. Because it's not about blaming. Because first of all, I've never met a parent yet. You know, when the child is born, says, okay, let's see, how can I really screw this
right,
life
exactly.
Up?
Yeah.
We just, parents are human beings and they pass on the patterns that they learned growing up. they do the best they can, but unintentionally, they pass on patterns that do diminish innate potential and our innate wholeness. So it's not about blaming our parents. It's more about being like an investigator and understanding conditioning that you were exposed to growing up. And then how is it impacting your life today, and what do you need to change? It's all about taking responsibility for your life. It's not about using the past as an excuse, but understanding where you come from and understanding what are the patterns that I learned growing up that may have made sense growing up and adapting to my family, but no longer serve me. In fact, they hinder my adult life. I encourage people to have compassion and forgiveness, because when you stay in the blame and do the blame game, you're stuck in a victim role, and you really can't take responsibility and move forward in your life.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you talk about this whole sense of, you know, your life's purpose or your authentic self, you know, how is it that people know what that is? Is there a way to find that, or this process allows you to discover more of that potential that innately we have?
The authentic self is simply the potential with which we're born. It's that innate wholeness I talked about before. Think about our life conditioning. It's like layers of things might be limiting beliefs. Person grows up in a family where there was a lack of stability. Things were changing all the time, or the bottom fell out. You know, dad lost his job and life changed. They had a really tough time, or the parents got divorced, or, you know, coming from a verbally or physically abusive family, they grow up with this feeling of the world's not safe, and then fear becomes a prevalent driver in their life. So they're not free to take risks. They're not free to try new things. And so that's an example of how one's life conditioning can kind of put a lid on their potential. Or if somebody's self-esteem gets compromised, you know, a parent that maybe loves the child but makes, you know, sort of critical remarks. Why can't you be smart like your sister? Well, you're going to go out wearing that, or, you know, you're putting on weight, or whatever the messages are that teach us unconsciously, we develop this limiting belief of somehow I'm not okay, I'm not good enough. Then the person grows up and they may go for jobs that are beneath their potential, or, you know, they're driven by such a fear of failure that they don't go for what they want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the authentic self is simply the potential with which you're born. If you look at a little kid in the grocery store that is not yet been conditioned to believe that it's not okay to be who they are, they'll go up to anybody. They'll say, "Hi, my name is Susie. Don't you think I look pretty?" You know, they just kind of go for it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we're born. We're not born ashamed or not good enough, afraid to fail, or any of those things. All learned patterns. Roadmap, if you will, that I've done in the Soulmate book is a very concrete, practical process that people can go through to peel away those layers of the conditioning to retrieve and liberate who they really are and start activating the potential in their lives.
So let's talk about that for a minute. But before we do, I'm curious. This whole concept of subtitle that talks about master the art of aloneness and transform your life, the word master sounds like a long time. Is this an ongoing process, a journey of life, or we can do the things on the roadmap and we can fix things?
Well, the conditioned self is pretty well formed by about the age of 7. How we see ourselves, how we feel about ourselves, our perception of the world, that pretty much happens by the age of 7. So the conditioned self has been driving the car of most people's lives, you know, for many, many years. So it's not going to happen, you know, boom, overnight. It's like anything else. If you're out of shape physically and you want to get fit and you want to get strong, then you have to start working out and you have to follow a disciplined routine. And over time, you will change your physical form and sense of, you know, and ability and strength. But it takes time. And it's having some new tools to do things differently that the more you do them over time, you start creating new outcomes. And those new outcomes start to give you a new experience and a new internal reference point. And if you do it long enough, it slowly overrides the old patterns that are embedded in the subconscious and makes the new way of perceiving the world and feeling about yourself and the world around you starts to override that and replace what I call their default operating system. Definitely is not a quick fix process, but by having really concrete, practical things to do, tools, guideposts, you can actually start to create some new results pretty quickly and dramatically, and relatively speaking, have some very dramatic results over a pretty short period of time. I've had a lot of clients that have done psychotherapy, and they have a great intellectual understanding of what their blocks are, what their fears are, what the patterns are from the past that may be affecting their lives, but they're lacking the skills of what to do differently to really change it. I'm all about practical tools and what do you do.
So give us some tools that we might be able to use. What examples might you have?
Okay, one of my most favorite and most powerful is what I call developing the inner nurturing parent. Most people grew up with parents that were less than optimally, unconditionally loving and accepting because their parents were people and they were flawed and they had their limitations. A lot of times, people don't know how to practice self-care. They don't know how to be their own best support. They don't know how to treat themselves with love and admiration and respect. Contrary, a lot of people are really tough on themselves. They despise themselves, they berate themselves, they feel bad about themselves, they don't take good care of themselves physically, they don't eat right, they don't get enough sleep, they tolerate less than respectful behavior from other people, all that kind of stuff. So this key of developing the inner nurturing parent, start treating yourself the way the most unconditionally loving and caring and supportive parent would a child. And it's things like start making your bed every day. For people that live alone, oftentimes they don't make their bed. They think, man, this is me. Why should I make my bed? But making this a regular practice, you make your bed every morning with the mindset or the attitude or intention that you would of somebody that you loved and wanted to do this for. And then when you get into bed at the end of the night, you consciously and mindfully thank yourself for doing this for you, and you enjoy the pleasure of getting into a freshly made bed. Or if you make a cup of tea, you do it with the intention, I'm going to make you a cup of tea. Instead of criticizing yourself, it's doing things like, what a good job you did, patting yourself on the back, literally saying out loud, I'm proud of you, aren't you good, good girl, good guy, you know, look what you did. It's really treating yourself not as a concept of loving yourself, but actually in action.
So let's put that in a real-world context about lots of things that are going on for folks right now in the workplace, where they're either very, very fearful of losing their job, or they have lost their job, and they're feeling pretty lousy about themselves and probably are in some of these conditioned patterns that you were talking about in the way in which they respond to that. Any tips about how to apply that sort of unconditional taking care of yourself when you're dealing with sort of emotional upheaval and your well-being as it relates to finances?
It's a really good question and certainly a timely question because a lot of people are dealing with this. And when we get into stressful, really tough situations and life crises, very often we default to our habitual patterns that aren't necessarily in our best interest. A lot of people will start to drink more, or they reach for the candy or the sugar, or they do substance abuse or something like that to try to manage the anxiety or the fear or the stress, and it actually exacerbates it. So in times like this, whether you're unemployed or you're afraid that you're going to be unemployed, or you're employed and now you're doing the position that five people did, Everything's on your plate and it's completely out of control, those things are really stressful, and that's the most important time especially to be taking care of yourself, eating right, and staying focused. For example, let's say you've been looking for a job for 6 months. Really easy to start feeling bad about yourself, for your self-esteem to really get diminished. So you make a list of all your strengths, and you keep focused on that. And when you're feeling down, you pull it out, and you say, look at all the things that I can do. Look at the accomplishments that I've achieved so far. You teach yourself, you train yourself to say, listen, I'm not going to take this personally. This is beyond my sphere of control. You know, the unemployment rate is very high, and it's not just me that's not getting a job. It's being your own coach. It's coaching yourself, but it's having the discipline and making yourself do something different. The automatic patterns of beating up on yourself, feeling bad about yourself, find other ways to stay motivated and supported. Go to networking groups. Meet with other people that are going through the same process. That's a means of supporting yourself, is through other people. And keeping that reality check, it's not just you. There's a lot of people going through it. Talking out loud to yourself, saying, this too shall pass, and let's see, always opportunities in crisis situations. Figuring out what are they. Example, let's say your finances are really have taken a big hit. Well, here's an opportunity to learn how to budget and learn how to manage money and become a more efficient money manager, for example. Finding the opportunities and then figuring out, how do I actually turn these challenges into opportunities so I can strengthen myself versus feel weak and helpless.
a lot of people start out with that kind of concept of really trying to focus on what needs to happen and to reinforce those behaviors. But somehow those motivations, that behavior is not something that persists. And I know reading some of your book and looking at some of what you talk about with folks and coach them, you have sort of a strategic element also. And to tell us a little bit about that, how do we stay focused and really make these things happen that we want to change in our life?
That's the key. What you just said is plan and following it, having a routine. So, for example, if you're unemployed, make yourself get up every day at a certain time, get yourself showered and dressed, and have a plan for that day, and having a structure, making the unemployed, you know, sort of process your full-time job, certain things that you're going to do every day. The more you do these things, the more you're going to get the benefit of staying motivated. The more you go into the pattern of, let's say, you stay in your PJs all day and you're watching, you know, soap operas or, you know, watching TV for half the day, well, it's going to reinforce this feeling of inertia, this of helplessness, this feeling of defeat. So the key is having a plan, having something to hold on to and do differently than the behaviors that are going to produce the results that you don't want to have. So let's say you've been trying to find a job for 9 months. It's saying, okay, you know, what could I do differently to get a different result? Let me analyze this and try to figure out what's not working. Maybe your resume is not strong enough. Maybe you need to find some creative ways to cut through the competition and be able to get to direct, you know, hiring managers versus being one of 300, you know, resumes that are coming on someone's desk. Or maybe it's saying, okay, how do I turn my skills and my experience into some temporary project work? It's trying to be creative and innovative and staying focused on finding solutions and continuously course correct what's not working or what might I try differently to get a different, you know, result, to get the interviews, to get in the door, start generating some money, you know, doing some other kind of project work. I had a client who was miserable in her job. This was a couple years ago, but she was really unhappy at work, and it was starting to affect her physically. You know, she's getting headaches and stomach problems, and she went through my career coaching program, and we identified a new career for her, but it required her going back to school and getting a master's degree. So she had to figure out how was she going to generate income while she was working. Well, she was always really good at doing PowerPoint presentations, and so we did some exploration, and what we came up with was that she was going to start her own company, mm-hmm. Specializing in PowerPoint presentations. And we put an ad together, we put it up on Craigslist, and that was the first step, and she started getting some project work, and now she's doing that as a source of income while she's going back to school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, having that creativity and saying, what is my skill set? Where are there market needs out there that I might be able to translate that into some temporary work? And if you're doing some project work, you're getting paid and you're in a professional mode, and it helps you in your motivation up because you're getting the feedback and you're getting the reward and you're not to this feeling of nobody wants
you. Right. Well, some great tips for a lot of folks that are really struggling. And Lauren, if people want to find out a lot more about the work that you do, about your coaching, about your new book, Soulmate, Master the Art of Aloneness and Transform Your Life, how do they do that? How do they find you?
Well, first is my name, which is LaurenMackler.com. I also have a blog that has a lot of free resources, a lot of articles, and it's an article that was in my newsletter this month called Doing the Work You Were Born to Do. Blog, and that is liveboldly.laurenmackler.com. There's no www, just liveboldly.laurenmackler.com. A lot of articles up there, and people can also sign up for my newsletter, which is free at my website at laurenmackler.com.
Again, your main website is laurenmackler.com. Blog was liveboldly.laurenmackler.com. And the book is Soulmate, Master the Art of Aloneness and Transform Your Life. Lauren, thank you so much for spending some time with us and giving us some tips and insights.
Well, thanks for asking me such great questions. It makes it a lot easier.
Oh, good. Well, it was a pleasure to have you. We're going to take a quick break right here, and I'll be right back.
Hi, this is Beth Polkowski. As many as 35.6 million people in the U.S. are living with Alzheimer's or a form of dementia. One of the major symptoms is memory loss that disrupts daily life. Early detection and medication can help your loved one and family. I know my mother suffered from Alzheimer's. If someone you know is having problems with activities like balancing their checkbook, operating a microwave, or using the TV remote control, these may be early signs of Alzheimer's. For more information and support, go to www.alz.org or call the hotline at 1-800-272-3900. That's www.alz.org, or if you prefer, the hotline is 1-800-272-3900.
Welcome back to Work Matters. I'm Nan Russell. As we think about some of the things that are facing us right now, not only in terms of the national issues about politics or the economy or some of the challenges that face us in our organizations or in our communities, I had this perspective that I just wanted to talk about for a minute. And it's something I'm throwing out there for you to think about. I've been thinking about it. And it's this concept about what predictions really mean and how does that work. It hit me the other day when I was looking for the umpteenth time at a weather report in our local newspaper that was so off, it was unbelievable. And that happens pretty often where I live. Now, I understand that there's a lot of things that happen in the areas of the Rocky Mountains, and we do get some very strange weather patterns. I understand all that. But most days, the weather is not right. And I was looking out the window, what was supposed to be kind of a partially sunny day in 68, and it was 49 and pouring rain. And if that only happened once or twice, I would say, well, you know, that's no big deal. But it happens all the time. Now, this is not a rant about the weather, but it got me thinking, if people who know the most about the weather, meteorologists, who know the most about it, get it wrong more often than not, what does that tell us about other things that are predictions? And here's some that just hit me, and I was thinking about it, because I went and I said, oh, well, let me look up a few. And, you know, in 1929, at the end of the year, the U.S. Department of Labor predicted that for 1930, they forecasted that it was going to be a splendid employment year. Now, we know that did not happen. And that was a year of the Great Depression. It's kind of like the prediction about 15 years later from the then chairman of IBM, who said, you know, I think the world is going to have at most the need for about 5 computers. And another prediction by Business Week in the 70s had to do with the Japanese, this is a quote, auto industry isn't likely to carve out a big slice of U.S. markets. We are wrong a lot. Our predictions are wrong a lot. And the people who know best, the meteorologists, the economists who understand complex trends and statistics, and the scientists and other experts, oftentimes we get them wrong. And yet we listen on our news to the various pundits. We read about it online, on bloggers, on journalists. And oftentimes we think that's the truth. We make business or career decisions about some of these predictions that are not true. It struck me when I was thinking about this, you know, I'm on Twitter, and you can follow me on Twitter if you want, Nan_Russell. But there was this great tweet the other day, and it said, knowledge is knowing a tomato is a fruit. Wisdom is not putting it in the fruit salad. I thought that was such a great tweet. And so it got me thinking about something for me to think about, and I wanted to share it with you. And that is about life's predictions, life's weather patterns, career issues, things that happen in businesses that we can't possibly tell about our own life. We can't predict our own life, let alone something else. And I decided that maybe the best way for us to think about it, or the best way certainly for me to think about it, was in another kind of tweet format. So this is my version that I would contend. Knowledge is knowing that the predictability of life is its unpredictability, And wisdom is not letting that stop you. Because all the time, we need to be out there learning and doing and growing. So that's my little segment that I do sometimes called Something to Think About. I hope it gives you something to think about this week. Coming up on next week's show, my guest is professor at Rutgers University, Paula Caligiuri. She is the author of a new book, Get a Life, Not a Job. Do what you love and let your talents work for you. As always, you can find more information on our website, workmatterswithnan.com. That's workmatterswithnan.com. So check it out. Take advantage of some of the free downloads and information there as well, workmatterswithnan.com. Thanks so much for spending some time with me here this week. I look forward to the time that we have together every week. It's such a great pleasure and honor to spend time with you here. And I hope that you remember along the way, whether it's a great week or not a great week, I hope you remember along the way that your work does matter. Take care. Have a great week. Bye for now.